You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome to the Drop the Needle podcast, your backstage pass to the mystical realm. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and here, gifted souls step up to the mic sharing their spiritual journey. We're hitting the high notes and the low notes of their awakening, creating a symphony of enlightenment. This isn't just another interview show. This is where divine insights are channeled and universal truths are revealed. So crank up your stereo and sit back, because who knows, this just might help you compose the next transformative chapter of your soul's purpose. Are you ready? Let's go. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Drop the Needle podcast. I'm your host, Jim Allstott, and I'm so happy you all decided to join us. We have Mr. Nate Scripture joining us on the Drop the Needle podcast today. Nate has an absolutely incredible background that I'd actually like him to share with everyone, because it is pretty unique. And I guess, first of all, welcome, Nate. Thanks for joining us.
Jim, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. I'll give you a little bit of my background, if you like.
Please.
You know, I graduated from college, and I basically ended up in communications, which I hadn't studied for. I was actually an art and business major, but ended up going into working for Discovery Channel, like back in the 90s. And that was my first real job out of college. It took me a while to work my way in there, but I got in there. And once I was in, it was like the most incredible. It was like, I didn't know I wanted to do this, but I want to do this, you know? And so for the last 22, 23 years, I've been in television media production, and I worked for Discovery for several years. Then I eventually ended up at National Geographic. And then I went independent and started making films for Smithsonian Channel, and then back to Discovery, and, you know, doing all of the usual suspects. And all the programs I did, they were based on different genres, like a lot were wildlife, some were crime, some were car racing, ancient history, just a variety of stuff, which I really loved. And so that's a little bit of my background.
It's very interesting. So is there maybe a program that you might be able to mention that people would recognize?
Well, probably the most recognizable, although I wouldn't consider my favorite one, but Into the Shark Bite, which was a Shark Week show that we
did. Oh, yeah.
I did that back in 2010. That particular one was a really great one. We were taking cameras. We wanted to see what it looks like inside the mouth of a great white. And so we had built all these contraptions and tried to convince these sharks to sort of munch down on our cameras. And then, you know, then we retrieved the footage. And that was probably one of the bigger ones. But even when I first started and I came into the company at Discovery Channel, I ended up working as a production assistant on Blue Planet, which was with David Attenborough.
Right.
Really big series, and ended up doing more programs with him over the years. But as a more junior level, you know, really just being witness to the amazing work he did. Eventually, I ended up doing a lot more wildlife work, which we can talk about if that's of interest.
Yeah. No, that's an incredible background to begin with, and then that transition into where you are today, I think is also unique. And why don't we talk a little bit about that awakening period for you? Because I know that there are probably a number of people that are out there right now that might be in
you know, the place where you were, was it 2019 you had said that that began? So some people might be experiencing that right now. So can you share that with us?
Yeah, I can. So yeah, 2019 was what I guess you would label as the awakening, when, you know, whenever my switch was turned on, you know, and everything started to go like wobbly, right? And part of that, part of that was that at that time I was the senior VP of a production company here in Maryland. We were doing quite a variety of programs. I was at that time I was developing ideas around psychics and paranormal and ancient history, and you know, there was a lot. There's a lot that goes on in running a company. You know what I mean? In television,
sure.
Putting out fires, you know. So
yeah.
I'd come home after a long day, and I'd, you know, I'd have a big glass of whiskey, probably what I shouldn't have been having. But, you know, I remember one day sitting there and drinking this glass of whiskey and saying to myself, God, am I going to do this every day in and out until I'm dead and there's nothing left? You know, like, what am I going to? And I think that question kind of like created, like, I don't know, like ignited something, because probably weeks after that happened, just more and more events started happening. I started kind of exploring things like Reiki and things that I normally wouldn't be interested in at all. And in fact, when I finally did do my Reiki one, which was, that was probably only like a month or two after, I think, my awakening, that really blew open my crown chakra. Like, I went and I remember doing this course, you know, and then on the last day, coming home and being like, I'm seeing things in the sky that I couldn't see before, you know, like ships. I'm like, what is that? You know what I mean? And then I actually had a, I don't know what you'd call it, a kind of jump in time where like a whole hour just disappeared. I went from one room and I knew the time right when I was standing in that room, and I went to the other room and it was only like 2 minutes, but like a whole period of time, like whole hour just vanished like that. And when I woke up on my bed with a, like a blinding headache. So something had happened. I don't know what that was. Maybe that
and it
was,
wasn't the whiskey.
It wasn't the whiskey. No, I wasn't drinking. I wasn't drinking and doing Reiki. But yeah, you know, so that started a snowball effect, you know, in my life. And it really changed things. And so I started developing, pushing more and more to make shows that were, you know, like, hey, let's do things that open up people's eyes in a bigger way. I mean, I've always love that, you know, from a storytelling approach, let's do that. But I really was like, hey, you know, maybe what we've been told about the earth and humanity and what we're doing here, maybe there's another layer of this that we need to peel back further. And so I started developing ideas with my team and trying to come up with ideas to break through the wall, you know, to kind of like, let's do something.
So how was that received by mainstream network or mainstream programming when you brought that up?
When if it was ancient archaeology, they're more open to that, you know, but then okay. if you go too far against the grain, you know, they were pulling back. And at that time, you know, I mean, streaming was a thing, you know, but still conservative in some ways, you know, even doing like trying to pitch paranormal shows, like the only place we could really take it to was Travel Channel, you know, like they were really the only ones at that time, and they were going through their own
ghost adventures and paranormal state and things like that.
But, you know, I didn't necessarily love paranormal, but I knew that I could create some interesting shows. And so I got to, you know, work with a lot of different psychics, because we were, you know, basically we were casting for these programs, and being around them really opened me up too, because I started having these great conversations, and then we would fly with them and take them to Travel Channel up in New York, and we'd have them like do these incredible readings that could not be like Travel Channel would ask them, how do you know where that person is buried, and the channel knowing where it was, they would just tell you, oh yeah, this person's behind a wall in this part of the state, like in a different state. I mean, all three of them did it was kind of like, I was going, what is going on? This is incredible. So I just continued to open up more.
That's crazy. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention right now, you were speaking of psychics and intuitives and things like that. Nate and I were introduced to each other through two different people in that psychic or medium realm. One, Heather Sprigg, obviously mutual friends. And then Mary Kay reached out to me, and I think she also reached out to Nate and said, hey, for whatever reason, you two are supposed to connect. And I'm thankful for that. That ever since then, we've been able to have some great conversations and get to know each other a little bit better and talk about some things that are very interesting, which kind of brings us here, right? So that's very well, thank you, ladies. I appreciate that. And very much. It was a very nice thing. With regard to, we were just talking about interviewing those types of individuals for the programming, doing casting calls and having them come in. And that, again, lends itself to that shift you were talking about. I don't know. Do you call it an awakening? What are you comfortable calling it? Do you label it or?
Right. Yeah, I guess I refer to it as an awakening, although I don't know if that's more of a religious connotation, but however you view it, it's sort of like
I don't know, a
rise in consciousness, maybe like unlocking of things, you know? Maybe it's really remembering, you know?
Yes. Well, I know with a lot of folks, it seems, you know, I shouldn't say a lot, but a number of the people that are on those types of shows, they talk about NDEs or near-death experiences. Did that ever happen to you for your awakening or for your gifts to start to open up?
That's an interesting question. I did not have a direct experience like, you know, where I was hospitalized or some crazy thing had happened, whereas I know a lot of people have. That wasn't the case for me. But, you know, I have had some near-death experiences, but nothing that left me maimed or
Being the food truck for a great white.
I was left at sea and when I was diving in Papua New Guinea and the tide was shifting and the light was going down and we were in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know, you're in the middle of nowhere and the ship was gone and I was left there.
Holy cow.
You know, this is my last day on Earth. It's funny because I don't really know if there was one particular thing that maybe it's just a series of like, you know, checkpoints in your life that you hit before it's like, okay, switches on, you know. Now, when it happened to me, I was 44 years old. And at that time, I thought, okay, well, why so late? Why not just get me started earlier so I can do my work? But, you know, everything, timing is the way it's supposed to be, you know. And maybe I needed everything that happened prior to 44 in order to really value the awakening, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's an interesting comment too, because as I've been researching the different stages of awakening or spiritual awakening, I think there's a reflection or a reflective point in everyone's lives where they may even say that. And why didn't this happen earlier? I could have been doing this so much longer and more developed or advanced in this, and I could have had a larger impact on society or, you know, individual lives. And what I found was that when people think that, it's typically a situation where they weren't ready. From my research, that's what they're saying, that it wouldn't have done any good because they didn't have a body of work to explain things that could become relatable to others. So your timing is your timing, and it's impeccable because it was there for a reason. Think about it, if it would have happened before you had all of these experiences as a producer, you wouldn't then have those, I'll call them concrete experiences or happenings to support what you're experiencing or what you experienced then and what you're experiencing now. So I think it all happens in divine timing. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing that you researched that. And that does seem to be the way that I feel about it as well. It happens in the right time. But like you said, you know, we build a library up in our life of all these experiences, you know, and at some point when you have your awakening, it's not like you just take the rest of that life and throw it away.
Right.
It's the foundation for the future. You know what I mean? Even if you're not doing that same line of work, you have very deep experiences you've learned from, right? And now you're applying them to what you're going to do next. So that too is its own process, right? Trying to shifting through such a thing. For me, it was big. I mean, being in media and television and working on these films and then just having a full shift doing like, okay, now I'm doing tarot and I've got Oracle and I'm doing healing and we can talk more about that. But I'm just, you know, all these modalities started to come online for me. And so that's been a big shift. And it's taken a few years to kind of like figure out how to adjust those pieces.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, it's, you go from, let's call it mainstream, even though it may be not mainstream for a lot of people to be involved with communications or television production or even movie production. But that is something mainstream from the standpoint that we see those things. We see those things on a regular basis. We go to see those things. So it's something that we seek out, right? So that is more mainstream to where you're at right now, that it seems like there's usually something that happens in someone's life, or they're at a particular crossroads in their life when they would reach out to you now, you know, for the new way of doing things or your new profession, your newfound profession, I should say. With regard to your profession in doing the historical or ancient alien type of shows, with all of your experiences with our human history and non-terrestrial experiences, where are we in terms of our civilization right now?
Yeah, wow, that's a big question. Not sure I have that full answer, and I know we're all seeking that in a way. But in my mind, or at least in my heart, the way I feel about it is, you know, we are collectively, humanity, ascending to a higher level of consciousness. You know, we all are. And that's been evidenced to me personally, just in my daily life and how I see things and see the changes, even though there seems to be a lot of stuff sort of falling, like crashing, systems mm-hmm. breaking, you know, a lot of turmoil. I think that is part of this process of entering a new world, a new era. You know, I think that's where we're at right now, to be honest. It's like we're seeing the systems that haven't worked for us, you know, the division that's been created, and now we're coming online. Like, humans are coming online. Mm-hmm. It's a wave, right? We're getting, you know, more and more people that I've known, even in the TV business, they too, like, it's funny when you run across them, like, oh, you had an awakening. I know you did. And, you know, you'll be able to pinpoint people right away. And so I know that it's just like this fire that's burning and spreading and raising the frequency of the planet and humanity. And so how we go about working through that, you know, there's still a lot of questions, you know. There's a lot of people that are not elevating, and that's fine. That's on their own. Everybody's on their own mm-hmm. clock, like you said. Everything's in divine timing. But, you know, we're getting to a point now where that could be damaging to their lives, you know.
Yeah, it seems like the old phoenix metaphor, sort of, or that things are being stripped away through the crucible of fire, if you will, in this, that you're right, things that are falling down around us may not have been meant or intended to be there forever, where, you know, we've bought into that thus far in our human existence. And with this leveling up, this happened and I'm saying this for you, this happened in 2019, and it was also about the same time that was happening for me. Have you, in your travels and in discussions with people, have you found that that's a common date for a lot of people?
You know, I have friends who came online earlier, like, you know, in the early 2000s, and they didn't say anything. They were kind of quiet until I had mine. But I'm finding that around that time, a lot of my friends, colleagues, people who are kind of in my age range, they also, from like 2013 to 2022, and now, you know, mm-hmm. that seems to be the window. Like, so after 2012, there was a big shift.
That leveling up.
And I think the planet leveled up. I think there's a lot of things that are happening, you know, and even now, you know, when we talk about the Schumann resonance and how that mm-hmm. frequency of the planet is different, you know, when you measure it, it's measurably different. Same with the solar flares that are coming into the Earth now. That's measurably different. There just seems to be a lot of different moving parts, and, you know, how to make sense of it is, you know, that's anybody's guess, but we're definitely in it. There is no doubt about that. And I think, you know, as we watch these systems crash down, new ones will be built up. You know, all the controls have been placed upon humanity, all of the programming, all of the hate, mm-hmm. a lot of lies and manipulation. You know, we really have been through the ringer, whether it's from the media or whatever, however you want to view it. But I think we're waking up to the fact that, you know, humans are far more advanced and far more powerful than they even know, you know? And so, like I said, it's a process of remembering who we are, that we are spirit mm-hmm. first, you know, incarnate in these human bodies, right? These meat suits, as people call them.
Right.
We are light, you know, we are information, we are knowledge. And when we are able to go back in and reflect about that and really look at ourselves, you know, from a higher perspective, that gives, I think that helps, that helps make things a little bit easier, no matter what's happening in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Holding that perspective that you're more than the meat suit, and that, you know, when you die, you're not dead, you know, you're
right. Yeah. Yeah.
Still alive. You go on, you have another life, another experience.
So that kind of brings me into the next question. And I'm going to go from our pre-show conversation when we were talking about carbon dating and the pyramids, and you shared a particular, actually two stories that I'd like to hit on if we can. One is about the pyramids, and you met somebody before they were going to a party, which I thought was very coincidental, but wasn't coincidental. And then the other would be about the Indian reservation that you had talked about. And these are, when we're talking about human history and development, and when I say development, not only as a physical development, but technologically speaking, and being able to do some of the things that were done archaeologically too. But I know I've shoved a lot of questions and information in that. So maybe let's start with the carbon dating, where you were talking to me about how interesting it is as far as some of the things that, from an archaeological perspective, that have been found and dated well beyond what we originally thought they were.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it keeps on changing. You know, it's even every time this conversation comes up, it's like, you know, the archaeology has to keep pushing things back. You know, like, although I don't know if they've fully come to agreement on that, there seems to be a little bit of a cabal when it comes to, you know, the archaeology. It's like, you know, this timeline is important to maintain despite evidences. And, you know, for whatever reason, I'm not going to go into that. You know, I can see where that would affect certain stories and certain, you know,
religions. But you also have to admit you were wrong along the way.
Yeah, you'll have to admit you're wrong. So for me, you know, I didn't get too heavily into carbon dating or anything, but I, you know, I did have an interesting conversation recently with a guy who he's been working with these Italian archaeologists and scientists who, you know, they've been scanning the pyramids around Giza.
Giza, right.
You know, the Giza Plateau. And, you know, they're finding these spires coming down from the corners of each of the four corners of the pyramids going down. But like, to, I think 2,000 feet, you know, like these scans that they're doing. Now, it's still unsure clearly what these things are, but they've found them around the three pyramids. And so in my mind, and it's funny, I wish I had a photo of it, but I had channeled like a drawing on my iPad. That's something actually when I started my awakening, I used to do is just like get my iPad out. I'm not particularly good at drawing, but I would just start channeling stuff. So I channeled this. I channeled this image of energy coming down from beneath the Great Pyramid and basically going up and out the point, and then, you know, basically being cast into space. But it was almost like I imagine it being a either a communication center to mm-hmm. other realms, to other, you know, other star systems. Because, you know, if you think about it too, like all the pyramids are all aligned with the stars, you know, they're perfectly aligned. But I also thought, okay, well, maybe it could be free energy that they had back in those times. But so whatever these spires are, they're something special, because the guy that I was talking to, they want to put together an expedition, and they want to kind of dig in deeper and find out, okay, what exactly are we looking at from these scans? And, you know, the technology that's available now is getting, it's so good, and it's getting better and better,
mm-hmm.
That I think we're going to be able to date things differently than that has been done previous, you know? And
That's something that I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, because he has fantastic guests. And he was talking about this specifically with one of his guests, somebody that you know, and you had mentioned him as going out on these, like, ancient aliens. He did the ancient aliens.
Oh, did he do, he did ancient apocalypse. Is it the Graham?
Yes. Yes, Graham. So he had Graham on his show, and he was talking about the pyramids with him, and was talking about water, like hydroelectric power sources, and right. that those spires or the things that were going down into the ground, the thousands of meters, were metallic.
That makes
and
sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really quite something. So to hear that, and it was interesting that I heard that podcast, and then our conversation was probably a week or two later, and I was like, holy cow,
right.
This is, there's a full-on push to find out what exactly we're dealing with here.
There is a push, but there's also, I think, some resistance from perhaps I think they're called the head of Antipodes in Egypt. You know, they too may want to maintain a certain mystique, I believe, but they may also be keepers of secret information that they don't feel is ready to come out. I don't know. But I do find it odd that, they built these magnificent structures as burial chambers. You know, if you look at it from the tunnels inside, it just seems like it's a machine. It created something that was, you know, these things are made with rock with crystalline in them, like conductors. Mm-hmm. They're conductors. And then at some point they had capstones that were likely made of metal or gold or some sort of conductor. And then, you know, talk about these spires going down. What were those? Were those copper? You know, what are those? You know,
I think that's what he mentioned, that it was, copper.
Okay, yeah.
I think he did say something like that.
So to me, that would almost make sense. But, you know,
right.
It's so grand to think about. And then you kind of wonder, you know, they're like, well, how did they move the rocks? And okay, that's fine. You know, there's been so many talks about that. But I wonder if the pyramids were built when the desert wasn't a desert. You know, I wonder if it's from an older time, you know, when
they've
done things differently.
That's a fascinating perspective. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how the hell they could make those pyramids and their structure has stayed in place and intact for thousands and thousands of years. And with our technology, why the hell can't the state and cities build our roads so that they don't fall apart, you know, after one season? Why, you know, they should go back there and go, you know, what the hell? It's ridiculous that happens, but, you know, kind of making a joke.
Where they get their granite. Yeah, I know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, come on. Those guys were making, you know, these towers out of nothing. Obviously, they're out of something, but you know what I mean? They had limited resources, but they were making something that stood and it has stood the test of time. It's just crazy to me.
The question is, how old is that test of time, really? You know, that's really what we're talking about. Because
sure.
You could put humanity further back, or maybe even other people who were on this planet before.
Right. Non-terrestrial life forms that we know today. Seems as though the government is giving out these little breadcrumbs here and there so it's not to blow our minds, would be my guess. So you were talking about the head of antiquities. I want to then maybe have you touch on the Indian reservation, speaking of head of something.
Yeah. Well, that's a good segue because, you know, one of the ideas that we were developing before I had my awakening, and I was before the pandemic, essentially. Once the pandemic hit, like a lot of TV production ended, you know.
Didn't
really do anything, you know. It was like, I can't film here. But prior to that, I had been developing an idea with a good friend, Ken Cosentino, and we basically put together a package where, you know, we went and we met with the Seneca, I'll say that, the Seneca tribe, Seneca Indians, you know, the five nations. Mm-hmm. Up in New York. And so they're pretty incredible people, I'll say that. And they invited us to come up there and meet them. And we did. We sat down with them face to face so we could make sure that everybody was all going to be kosher. And we talked about, like, okay, what can we do as a film project with you guys? We understand you have some interesting things on your property, on your reservation, essentially.
Right.
They were like, well, we have pyramids on our property, you know, and they showed us the scans from the U.S. Air Force that were taken back in like the 1940s that have been declassified now. But they showed us the scans, and I believe they were also configured in a very similar, if not almost exact, configuration to the Giza Plateau, those pyramids too.
Isn't that something?
Not the size and scale, like the
position.
The position. Like there was like a bigger one and then two smaller ones. And I believe they also were like aligned with like the star, same star, like Orion and, I don't know, Sirius, whatever they got. Anyway, we talked about that. They showed us that and we were like, well, that's incredible. Like, why haven't we never heard of that before? You have pyramids on your land? Like, you know.
Right.
They said, well, we've got more. We have actual giants. Skeletons that are buried on the land here, because that's part of
what. Say that again.
They have giant skeletons, like giant skeletal remains of a human or some species of, you know, hominid, I guess. But wow. they had those there, and I said, well, you know, how are we going to verify that? And they said, well, you can't dig them up because they're sacred to us, but, you know, you could scan them. You could get ground penetrating radar. You could get other technologies, you know. And we were like, wow, this is incredible. You know, and then they were like, well, if you think that's great, they also have a couple caves in their property where I guess I'll just say that they have inscriptions and writings that look very similar to hieroglyphics, they said, inside of them. And they also have some mummified people that are in these caves. So, you know, then, you know, we talked to them a little bit further about it, and, you know, they were, you know, they weren't like cagey, but they were thinking like maybe we had visitors, travelers from overseas mm-hmm. long before.
You know, so they weren't, these mummified people weren't necessarily people from their tribe.
No, it didn't seem like that. It seemed like they came from another place, like another part of the world. Like maybe they had visited, or maybe, you know, the Americas aren't as new, the new world
as we thought. Right.
Right. So everything is like, but then, you know, things got a little bit convoluted because we were coming up on the pandemic. And of course my bosses at the time were, while supportive, they were also very skeptical. But the thing is, we were going to need to spend a lot of money just to do the research to, you know, to find out if things were real. You know, like, were these real bodies in the ground? Were these pyramids true? You know, we were going to have to spend a good bit of money and that sort of turn. You know, when you're a television production company, you know, you don't want to be investing that type of money just to pitch it to someone. You know what I mean? So that was where we ran into problems. So that show never got made. But I had worked with other archaeologists, and we looked at other places around the world, like especially in South America and Colombia. They wanted to use LIDAR to scan the entire rainforest. You know, not just of Colombia, but also in Brazil. And they wanted to do these massive, massive scans because they believed that there were many structures underneath the forest canopy, which we're finding out to be true now. You know, like things are coming out every day about kind of these hidden structures. But they really had a plan to do it. And what I wanted to do, and they were a little bit reluctant to do, is I wanted to bring a couple of trusted psychics on to the expedition because I felt that they were going to be able to help pinpoint certain things without having to literally fly a million square miles around the location. You know?
Like, oh, did I just see something?
Yeah. So that, and they were like, you know, the particular person I was dealing with, he was like, that would be incredible. He's like, I would also lose all my funding if I were ever associated with psychics.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, he's like, that would really mess up everything. So that was never really going to be on the table. Unfortunately. And again, that was right on the heels of the pandemic, so we didn't get to
explore. That is absolutely fascinating to me to hear that. And it's too bad it wasn't able to be made. That wouldn't that have been something. Holy cow.
Holy cow. And just incredible. Things will be made. Just, you know, we weren't able to do them, but that doesn't mean they won't be done. I feel like, you know, these things are being done, and especially with that ancient apocalypse, you know, when you look at that.
Sure, yeah.
And the way that they've looked at the structures and the dating, and, you know, like there's a lot of questions that are right. More questions than answers, for sure. So,
Would you come out of retirement if somebody tapped you on the shoulder to do that?
I probably would. If it was a really interesting expedition, I would. Yeah.
That would be so cool. Wow. I'm going to switch gears a little bit on you here and go more towards the after your awakening period. So you were talking about your awakening and things starting to open up, and you had an awareness of gifts at this point. What were some of those things that were coming up for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, it was more like an exploration, like, okay, I have had this awakening. I'm kind of experiencing like this other reality that isn't the one that I've been living in. What do I do now? What am I supposed to do with this? You know, there's no manual, right? I mean, I guess the manual,
right.
You are the manual, right? It's like you've got to do, I really got deeply into meditation.
Figure the shit out yourself.
Yeah, pretty much. That should be a book, you know, because it is what happens. Luckily, there are great people who've been through it, but just finding people can be a chore. At least it was a bit for me. And I got into reading books, and I got into the Reiki, like I said, and then I really got heavily into meditation, which we all should be doing, regardless of whatever you have, you know, just getting quiet, listening to that internal ticking, you know, that's where you're getting your information. I don't know. So for me, I ended up joining some psychic classes, like about channeling and psychic development, mediumship. You know, I kind of explored that. And some of that was really great, but it was like being thrown into the fire because some of them, I, you know,
oh, yeah.
practices, and people were already very advanced.
Advanced, right.
Functional mediums and things. And I'm thinking like,
oh. Yeah.
But, and then they put you in there and you're like, okay, you go. And I'm like, I don't have anything for you.
Red crayon.
Yeah, red. You know, it's actually funny that you say that, because to me, that actually is probably the best example that I learned through all of my classes. So whoever's listening to it and is going through this right now and they're trying to figure out, what am I going to do? Like, you know, how am I going to put this together? It really comes down to like trusting your guides and your team, you know, and just trusting what images they show you or what you hear or what you just feel like, you know, what you feel like. There's different ways people perceive information. But for me, you know, I'm more clear cognizant, but also I would sometimes see like an image in my mind, you know, like the red crayon, you know? So if I was connected to someone, and it took me a while to just say, okay, I'm a blank slate. Spirit put something in front of me, and then they put a thing, you know, and then they put another thing, and I just tell that person what I'm seeing, and they'd be like, oh, that's funny. Like, I just had that for breakfast this morning. Oh, that, you know, I'm about to do that later on. But you just described like the room in my house where I've been renovating, you know, stuff that I just don't, you know, like, I don't know what that is. So it's kind of like a sloppy way of getting in, but the red crayon is a good way, because you're just like, okay, what is that one thing that just comes to mind?
Right.
Don't overthink it. Like, once you start thinking, you're right.
Yeah,
you really want to just be like, you want to be clear. And that's why I actually ended up getting into tarot, because it kind of shut off my mind and put me more in the present moment, and like, not, you know, the images would start to lay out stories, and I could start seeing people if they were having health issues, or, you know, issues or their relationships or their business, or whatever it is, you know. And you know, so the tarot is another great tool. It doesn't have to be only tarot. It could be oracle cards. It could be whatever you want. You know, what I recommend to people is, you know, just get a deck, you know, take a card out. What I would do is I'd shuffle a deck. I'd ask a question, pull out that card, and then see how that card, the imagery, relates back to your question. And as I started doing that, I would ask another question, and then, well, then you start to see a theme, and then you're like, oh my God, this is actually, they're laying out something that I know to be true. Like, they're showing me, everything, you know? And so for me, that ended up being a great way to get into doing more of my psychic development.
So my skill. I'm going to back up just a second. Excuse me. You had mentioned that you started to go through classes or coursework and things like that to sharpen or open up the door to other gifts or skills. How did you go about finding those?
The courses?
Yes. Yeah. The courses.
Yeah. There's a lot of hunting online, you know, looking up channeling and, you know, who's doing what. And luckily I had some experience, because I was developing psychic shows. Some of those people actually had courses already. They were like, little to my knowledge. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, you're a psychic. Oh, you also teach it, you know? So I'd find out through them. And I'd,
after the fact, right?
Yeah. And I'd be led to like, okay, wow, this is okay. We'll try that out. But ultimately, my most favorite class is the class I believe that you also began to participate in.
Yes. Now. Yeah. With Pat.
Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely. When I was going to say, if you're thinking, you're not linking, that was one of Pat's favorite sayings. And that's very true. So yeah, please.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Pat. Yeah. Love talking about
Longo,
Pat.
Longo, the mother of mediumship and everything else, healing. A dear friend of ours, Heather Sprigg. Well, she said, look, Nate, she's super gifted, like amazing gifted. You already know that.
Yes, absolutely.
And she said to me, look, you know, I know what I've been in the same class as you've been in. And in fact, that's how we met. And she said, you got to come over here. Come. I'm going to introduce you to Pat Longo, who was kind of the mentor for Teresa Caputo, the Long Island comedian.
Right.
So, you know, I said, okay, I'd love to meet Pat. And the minute I met Pat, it was like an instant, like, you know, it's like a grenade just blew. It was like, wow, where have you been? And Pat, unfortunately, she passed this past June.
Yes.
Her classes were so well done. She was so perfect the way she matched people. Like, she put two people together, and they could have different abilities and skills, whatever. Like, one could be more advanced and one could be very, like, coming into this new and blind. She just knew how to put them together, and she put people on one, like, you know, Zoom rooms and said, okay, I want the two of you to spend 10 minutes reading each other. You spend 10, and you practice whatever you want. And man, Once I started doing that, I felt much more confident in my ability. I started greeting people, like, you know, without having to really think as much. I mean, she really did some major work for the spiritual community, and her loss is, you know, I don't think there won't be another Pat Longo. There just won't be.
No.
I think there are great people out there, but there Pat Longo, there is no.
No, she is one of a kind. I was just going to say, I think that she's one of a kind, and the mold was broken with her for sure. And I recall the first time I met her, and it was as if we had known each other for our entire lives.
Oh yeah.
She was that welcoming, open, fun, loving, accepting, all of the things that you would want from that maternal figure, right? And she was absolutely an amazing person.
100%.
So she would be one of your, would you call her a mentor then?
Yeah, I would say okay. She's a mentor. Yeah, definitely. You know, I get to spend a couple of years attending her classes, and of course, we became friends anyway on the side, and
sure,
you know, we could talk about anything, you know, and she had so much experience of healing people, like really miracles. There's no other word for it. Miracle. She really,
right.
If you want to have a definition of a word miracle, she could literally touch somebody physically and they would heal. And, you know, and sometimes it wouldn't happen, but I don't think it was because of Pat. It was just because that person wasn't meant to heal at that time. Right. Because we all, you know, and Pat would always say to you, be humble, be modest. You are not the one doing the healing. You are the channel for the healing. Spirit is doing it. You mm-hmm. be humble, and you know, you do what you know you need to do. You know, that lesson is so powerful for me, you know, and I think it's powerful for people who are awakening now too, to be humble, right. And to know that you are the conduit for spirit, that it works through you.
So, and it's not you.
It's not you. You know, a lot of people, you know, yes, it's you in the sense that you know you're the instrument. Without spirit, there is no
right.
This is a co-creation. So Pat was very strong about that, and I think she was like that with all her students. She preached that, and she preached integrity, because there are mm-hmm. a lot of people who do not work with integrity. A lot of people work with dark magic, with all sorts of stuff. You really have to be somebody of integrity to be doing readings and to respect and honor another person if you're going to be working with them. You really have to have that as your foundational point. If you don't have that in you, then you shouldn't be working and healing with other people. That's the bottom line. That's
it reminds me of the Spider-Man movie when his uncle says, great power comes great responsibility.
Right.
In that responsibility, I feel, is just like you're saying, that you do have to be humble. You have to do it without ego and judgment, because it's not you and it's not yours. All you're doing is sharing the information, and it's going to be received how it's going to be received.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's not for us to decipher or determine what that information means. It's for that individual. Exactly. That's very cool. So you mentioned healing too, because I know that is part of your offerings, which are plentiful, by the way. You have energy healing, vibrational therapy, intuitive readings, detoxification. You also have awakening guidance, which I think, I mean, where the hell were you when I needed you?
Yeah, where were you when I needed you?
And then evidential mediumship. Would you mind going through those a little bit and kind of laying out what it is for people, so when they contact you, they know what it is?
Of course, yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. It's a lot of trial and error, you know, some part developing. I think what happens is we have humans, we're very gifted. You know, we have a lot of gifts, you know, and it's, some people are stronger in some areas than others, or let's just say it comes more natural to them, but it doesn't mean you can't develop and be a very strong in that area. It's just some people... Mm-hmm. It's like light turned on, and that's what they're going to do. I'm an Akashic reader, and I can read your, you know, your past life histories, and I can do this, and I go in here, and I cut this golden cord, and, you know, there are people who do that. I don't do that, at least not yet. But I do focus on energy work. I like the energy work because we are energy, you know, and it's important that we clear our energy, that we have energy hygiene, that we take care of ourselves, keep our frequency and our vibration up. That is part of our job as humans. It's very easy to get pulled into like these lower states. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world. It's very easy to fall into the traps, you know? And so it's important to care for your energy body as much as it is your physical or anything else, but your energy body is vital, right? So I got into a little bit of Reiki. I didn't go deep into Reiki, but I do like Reiki. I actually use tuning forks, which I find amazing. I have a whole bunch of them here, kind of see them, and I hold them over your chakras and they start to spin a certain direction when they're clearing out, you know, and then I can see when they're done. So I can literally move the wands and see what's going on in your energy body, you know, and then I'll clear it out. I'll clear it out.
Is that just an in-person offering?
That would be in-person. Would be in person. And I like that because there are different types of tuning forks. Some are for your physical body, and then some are for your body, but people react really well to them. And in fact, when I did my first tuning fork, I did it on someone and I didn't really know what I was doing at that point, but they had to go to the hospital. And I thought, oh my God, like, did I just do that? And it just turned out that her root chakra was so like clogged up with, like, there was just a lot of stuff she was holding that she needed to like pass, like basically she had
all of it out.
She had to like physically remove from her body, and she never had done that. And so for her, it was like so like scary that she thought she had to go to the hospital to have it checked out. And they're like, you're fine. You just have to go to the bathroom. You know, you're gonna... And so I, but yeah, like people have really stuck energy. That was the first time I thought, oh wow, like, imagine holding on to that energy for so long, you know? And that's what happens, right? Because that's how cancer and disease or dis-ease of the body, right? Like it comes in energy first, right? And then if you don't clear that energy, it anchors into your physical. So that's why I find it to be important for people to manage their energy.
And absolutely.
So that's one thing. And then I do remote energy healing. So I can basically check your chakras. I have like a chart and I'm able to do it remotely. And then I go through your entire energetic system. And they kind of show me things, you know, as I'm going through it. But I go through your physical, your emotional, your mental, and your spiritual body, and I clear that out. And some people have really amazing experiences, like overnight healings, you know, which again, it's not me, it's just the energy. So that's
sure
that people enjoy doing. They really love that. And what I do with my energy readings, I'm not just going to help clear you. I'm going to give you some intuitive health guidance too, because they're going to show me, my guides will show me things that, you know, either you need to add to your diet or that you need to remove from your diet, or things that you need to like physically do to help clear out. So that's a big part of what I do. And then I have evidential mediumship on my website, Blue Tiger Arts, but I don't really practice that so much. What I do is I allow that to come in if it's going to come in, you know. I'll like spirit will show me if there's like a loved one, they may start showing me evidences like, you know, hey, you're holding this or something, you know, like, and then I'll let that happen. But I typically am not really doing that service right now. I may do that in the future, but, I do the oracle and tarot cards. So I do readings, and I find those to be really powerful too, because, you know, the cool thing about tarot cards is you pull out a card and I can literally show you what they've shown me, and I'm like, what, you know? And sometimes people will just break down in tears because it's literally the image of the thing that we're talking about, like, you know, sometimes it's just the most powerful thing. Like, I could tell it to you, but then if I just showed it to you, I'm like, look, this is what they're showing me. And you see it, you're like, your mind is completely blown away.
Well, it doesn't take much for my mind to get blown with any of this. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
How do you know that? It keeps coming up routinely. And that's one of those things that I always mention, that I have a healthy dose of skepticism going into things, because what you mentioned, there are a number of people that are out there that are fantastic, just amazing individuals, very talented and gifted. And there are those that are more opportunistic, if you will, in taking advantage of people and taking their monies, or preying on emotional wounds that are present. And then they just keep feeding that, and it's really too bad.
Yeah,
I think I'll have a reminder later on about how to get in touch with you. But for now, I'd like to maybe get to the musical questions. Are you okay with that?
I am. I would love to quickly mention, although this is a longer story, I would like to mention something that really changed my healing, like getting into the healing business.
Oh, please.
And I'll keep it brief because it is a bit longer. But I had a friend who came to me. He was also in television, and he actually was the head of the company. And he came to me and he said, you know, I got cancer. It's not good. And he goes, I've got issues going on in my body right now. And, you know, I don't know how long I have. It basically was like a blood cancer, but it was eating him away. And I said, well, you know, that's funny because I have a friend who's a healer, someone who can help perhaps you with this. And I didn't really tell him too much about my awakening at that point. I was kind of quiet, but I said, you know, maybe we can talk to him. And so we did. And we agreed that we would do like a ceremony, and we would start to, we would use like herbal teas and herbal medicines to help him with it. And we use like low frequencies over his like sacral chakra, you know, mm-hmm. that he would do at night. So we gave him a combination of things to help him. So at the time he was going, this is right when the pandemic began. So it was, I think it was March of 2020. It was right around the cusp. So we worked with him for a few weeks, and he was being tended to by the doctors at Johns Hopkins. They had been giving him chemotherapy. He'd been through all the stuff, you know, and
Standard Western medicine.
And in the meantime, I was making like teas with burdock root and slippery elm and other ingredients that are meant to help kind of detoxify, but also to help inflammation and just basically help stamp out some cancer. So we used those tonics along with the energy, you know, the low hertz. And lo and behold, he had a test. So what was happening to him, the doctors were worried that he was going to be paralyzed because his spine was deteriorating. There were holes in it. It looked like Swiss cheese. You know, if you imagine little holes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they were basically going to use, I guess, the equivalent of like a spinal putty or cement to fill in these holes. They were worried that, you know, look, if he made the wrong move and torqued his back,
right,
he'd really break a vertebrae and he'd be paralyzed.
Paralyzed, right.
So, well, what's interesting is he went a couple weeks after working with him, he went to have the scans done. They wanted to look at his spine because they wanted to see what they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everything in the spine was filled back in. There were no holes. Everything was gone.
Oh my gosh.
He was in full remission. And they have zero explanation for any of that. There's more to the story, but it's too long for what we're doing. But the short of it is that, you know, within like 2 months, he was completely healed. And that was 5 years ago.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was kind of like a journeyman on the, you know, there was a more primary healer, but he helped guide me. And so we did it together. And that's what really blew things open for me as well. And then when I finally met Pat, she, oh my God, 1111 just turned on my phone. Pat goes to me. She goes, you know, you're a healer. I said, what? She said, you're a healer. Well, I've been part of a healing, but you know, she goes, you're a healer. You're going to be healing people. And she would always know, like whenever I touched her, she's like, oh my God, your hands are like on fire. I'm like, they are. She's like, I can feel it, you know, because I would do healings on her too.
Sure.
And she just knew. That was the cool thing about Pat Longo. She just knew. And I never got to go deeper with her about other stuff, but that was one of the things she wanted me to continue to, whatever I decided to do, you know, spiritually or with our gifts, you know, she wanted me to continue with the,
Well, thank you for sharing that. That's a heck of a story.
The reason why experience. I bring it up is because, you know, a lot of people are getting cancer now, right? We're seeing like everybody is getting cancer, and it's terrifying, you know, and we know it's in our food and it's in our environment. And, you know, I know people are going to the traditional methods, you know, but those are not, you know, they're very, it's a crapshoot. In fact, I've been working with a family who had a, 6-year-old daughter with brain cancer. She passed away.
Sorry.
And you know, they were doing the traditional stuff, and it just, you know, the doctors only have limited, like, you know, they're limited to what they've been trained with, you know.
Sure.
And so I think all of us now need to be looking not outside
at holistically.
Yeah, holistically integrated medicine. Mm-hmm. No, but we really need to start thinking differently about what cancer is and why they haven't been able to heal it, and why is that. You know, these doctors are super bright. They're super gifted, super talented.
Oh, right.
But they've been trained in one-dimensional healing. You know what I mean? And it's correct. Not really healing. Sort of like maintaining is what they treat you for.
Right.
I bring up the relevance of that story only because I think that, you know, I want people to start thinking differently about how they, if they have cancer or they have loved ones with cancer, to look at other.
No, I think that's important. I really do. I think that that's a very important thing. And thank you again for sharing that. That's quite incredible. Really. So what we'll do now then is we'll go to the part of the show when I have the chance to ask you some musical questions.
Okay.
I always say that I believe that music is the tie that binds, and each of us has a soundtrack that accompanies their life if they just take a moment to think about it. So are you ready to go?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, cool. What was the first song you fell in love with on the radio?
You know, that's an impossible question.
Sorry.
But, you know, I was born in 1975. So really the music I started listening to was like in the early 80s. Like I really was into that, you know. But the songs that stuck with me were ironically from the time around when I was born. So for that song, I'm thinking of like Led Zeppelin, Good Times, Bad Times. I love that.
Okay, song. That's a good song.
I really love that. They also did the song In the Light. I really love that song
too.
But those were songs, even when I was young, I loved classic rock. I loved stuff from the 70s, the 60s. But then I also appreciated the 80s. And I was thinking like, okay, what would be the ultimate like 80s song? And I was like, well, probably Men at Work, like Down Under.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Such
a cool song.
Take a bite of your Vegemite sandwich. Yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That one and also I was a huge Eagles fan. You know, Eagles were still big. I still will listen. I love
them. Yeah.
I think their songs are extremely spiritual, just like Led Zeppelin. But the one that I liked was One of These Nights. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, that's a great song.
I could play it on blast. And it just
oh, yeah. Great. Don Henley, man. He was something else. Okay, so growing up, did you and your family go on any road trips? And if you did, were there any songs that you can recall?
That's funny. You know,
or it can be with your friends too. It doesn't necessarily, if you were in school and you went on a road trip and you were blasting something out.
Right. I think with family, that we would always listen to music all the time in the house. And my sister and I, when we were young enough, we'd be wearing those like onesie PJs, you know, and like mom would turn on like Michael Jackson. We always loved dancing to either Thriller or Billie Jean, you know, jumping around like little beans. That type of stuff. But then if I were, I guess, a little bit older, I really liked REM. I liked Orange. I like a lot of
that
type of stuff. As far as sing-along, we didn't really do sing-along. That wasn't our thing, sadly. But we would dance. My sister and I would just dance the songs for our parents and put on a little performance.
Oh, that's cool, though. That's very cool. Get the jump rope as the microphone.
Thank God there was no, like, you know, recording.
Video back then. Oh my gosh, we talk about that on a regular basis that, you know, thank goodness for a lack of technology back then.
Oh yeah.
I mean, how embarrassing would that be? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no.
So we're going to fast forward a little bit to high school and your senior year in high school. Do you remember what your favorite song that you and your friends might have been belting out in the car?
You know, that's a funny one because high school, that era was so great for me. It would have been in the 90s. And so we have like Pearl Jam, we had Nirvana, Red Hot Chili Peppers. But the one that I really liked and I was always been a fan of were the Beastie Boys. And like you could pretty much name any song, we'd sing it out loud. But Gratitude was one that we really liked, and Sabotage. You know,
Sabotage is fantastic. Yeah,
those were ones that we would yell out. But I also liked Under the Bridge, which was, you know, the Chili Peppers song. I love that.
Yeah, very cool.
Cool songs, you know, that will never go away.
Did your musical taste change when you were in college, or did they pretty much stay the same?
They evolved a little bit. I still stuck with classic rock. Like I loved Creedence, I loved Eric Clapton and Led Zeppelin. Oh, yeah. I really loved that. In fact, my first concert when I was a kid was Eric Clapton. And then after that, it was Jimmy Page and Robert Plant. And I got to see some legends, you know, some real legends. I don't know, something about these British musicians, they're just, you know, we have great musicians here, but wow, there was an era where they were just killing it. You know what I mean?
That's where, in my opinion, that's where the creation of that was made, was there.
Yeah.
When you talk about the Beatles and Zeppelin and Cream and all of those bands, I think that that's where it was really started.
More out of.
Yeah, you know, and there's an argument to be made that really the Delta Blues,
yeah, I think
there was responsible for Elvis, you know, and that sort of thing. But
the jazz music,
that
influenced a lot of their
stuff. Correct. Yeah, Robert Johnson had a big influence on Eric Clapton. Right. That I know.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool. As far as songs that get your positive juices flowing, is there any particular song that makes you want to go out and crush your day?
You know, the one thing that I liked listening to in high school, and I still do now, was Rage Against the Machine. And positive or not, but you know, they too are very spiritual. They talk about some pretty deep stuff if you really dig in. But I like their Calm Like a Bomb, you know.
Yeah.
Song was like that, just like you could feel all the atoms in your body just light up, you know. It was just like you just wanted to. So if you were gonna really want to go crazy, that and they had a song called Maggie's Farm, which I don't know if you remember. That was a Bob Dylan, I think he originally wrote that song.
Okay.
Anyway, those two are really
that's great. Very cool. Oh, I love that. You're the first one that's brought up Rage.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Probably not under the positive.
Well, you know what? Each person is, well, we're all individuals. We all have individual tastes. And you're talking about frequency and energy, right? So, I mean, if it's a beat, if it's whatever, it doesn't really matter what the song is. It's how it lands with you. So, kind of cool. What about a song that's your guilty pleasure right now?
You know, if nobody had to know about it, well, I guess they will now. But I still love Tears for Fears. Everybody Wants to Rule the World.
Yeah.
You know that song? Anytime I hear it, I don't know why. I love that. I don't know why I love it. I love that song.
Yeah. It's got a strolling kind of beat where you're just walking at a nice pace and
yeah, it's just easy and I don't know, just it's a simple song, but I like it.
Oh no, it's very cool. What song do you believe could change the way people think or feel about the world around them positively if they listen to the song's lyrics?
I think the Bob Marley song, Three Little Birds.
Oh yeah, Three Little Birds is a good one.
And it's just a simple song. It's so simple, but it's almost like that's the point of it, maybe, is that everything is going to be all right. Because, you know, our whole life is trials and tribulations, right? And somewhere, though, we have to have this deep knowing that, you know, whatever we're up against, it ends and there's another cycle and you'll be through it. You'll work through it. And that song comes to me because I would be thinking about Pat or even talking to Pat and that song would come onto my radio, onto my Sonos player, you know, and I would say, hey, you know, this song came on and it's for you. And I would send her that song so she could listen to it, you know, when she's going through her cancer treatment.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what also popped in my mind when you did Three Little Birds is Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy. It's kind of that.
Yep. 100%.
Reggae.
Yeah. The reggae, like Let It Go. You know, I mean, Bob Marley was so influential. I think listening to his music now is just incredible. If you think about the body of work and what he speaks about.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
To our time.
Yeah. Today. And that's so I believe that there are artists. And they're musicians, right? And there, in my opinion, there is a difference between the two, because in my opinion, so like Bob Marley, I love him as an artist. I think that the tapestry that he has of his music is something that weaves in and out of time and people's way of being. And another artist I feel is an artist is like Billy Joel, I think is absolutely an artist because you can have a pianist and then you can have somebody that's getting everything out of it. And to his credit too, you're talking about then a lyricist and somebody who can put it all together because there's one thing to be able to play with artistry and there's another thing to create it.
Right.
And I think those two
well put
are in that category. There's this is one of my favorite questions. And it's sometimes there are songs you hear that ring so true that they can stop you in your tracks. The song's lyrics sound like they were written specifically for you or by you. What's that song?
You know, I think that song sort of changes depending on where I am in my life, but the one I've been hearing more recently, is Stick Figure. Do you know that band? Also like a kind of a reggae band. They're great. But they have a song called Angels Above Me.
I don't. Who is it again?
Stick Figure.
Stick Figure. No.
Yeah, they're kind of like a ska reggae, but they're incredible, and their lyrics are so potent. They're clearly an awakened band that is trying to spread a certain message of positivity and help lift people up, you know, for goodness. So I love anytime I hear any of their songs, but that song, Angels Above Me, just feels like it's like, again, it's a little bit.
That'll be on my Spotify player after we're done with the show today. Well, I'll check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
I will for sure. I love that. Do you have an all-time favorite song?
Man, you know, favorite is hard, but the one that comes to mind the most is the Talking Head song, This Must Be the Place.
I don't know that one.
Okay, yeah. It reminds me of, like, we're alive, we're living, we're having this human experience, and everything is, again, it's like, it's okay. Like, we're wading through this and trying to figure shit out, and, you know.
That's cool.
So it all of these artists, actually, I think that we've talked about, all have those themes, like, running through their work, pretty much, other than maybe. Yeah.
Well, you know what? That's about an ego, you know, and then losing ego. With that, everybody wants to rule the world, you know. So no, I'm definitely in agreement with that. That's awesome. And thank you for sharing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's not always easy for people to do, for, you know, for a variety of reasons. But thank you so much for doing that.
Please go listen to that Talking Head song. This Must Be the Place. You'll know it the minute you hear it.
Oh, but, I will.
Yeah,
I will. Because I'll put together the playlist, and then, like I said, Stick Figure, I'm going to put on right away and start listening to that. So I'm looking forward to that.
I love it.
Well, it's just about time to cue the music for today's episode, but don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe to the Drop the Needle podcast to stay up to date on our latest episodes. I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone again for tuning in today, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Drop the Needle podcast. I would also like to thank our special guest, Mr. Nate Scripture, for being on our show today. Nate, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you so much. Love talking to you. I hope we get to do this again.
I'd love to do it again.
So we could cover, you know.
My gosh, we can go down several rabbit holes and spend days talking about this stuff. I'd also like you to head on over to our show notes, where there's going to be a link from the playlist from today's episode. And there's also going to be a link where you can contact Nate regarding booking a session with him. And that is www.bluetigerarts.com. Again, www.bluetigerarts.com. All right, my Drop the Needle posse, like Billy Joel says, from the highs to the lows to the end of the show, this is the end of our show. Until next time, this is Jim Allstott wishing you infinite health and happiness and the perfect playlist for your life. Thank you again for being the best part of us. Catch you next time.